Hello and welcome to the September 29 edition of the Safety at Work podcast. My name's Kevin Jones, I'm the editor of Safety at Work magazine, and in this edition we have an exclusive interview with Professor Stephen Allsopp, the director of Australia's National Drug Research Institute. This week he's been attending the Australasian Amphetamines Conference to speak specifically about drug use in workplaces. According to figures released at the conference, amphetamines are the second most popular illicit drug after cannabis, and Australia and New Zealand are believed to have the highest numbers of users compared to other developed countries. We talk with Stephen about the seriousness of drug use as a workplace hazard and how we can approach a potentially drug-affected worker. More information on the amphetamines conference will be included in the October edition of Safety at Work magazine, and we'll be including a full transcript of this interview also. But now some background on Stephen Allsopp. Steve Allsopp has worked in the drug field for over 20 years and been involved in research and professional development for health, police, education, welfare staff and community organisations. In addition to being the director of the National Drug Research Institute, Professor Allsopp is an adjunct professor with the Centre for International Health in the Division of Health Sciences at Curtin University. From a quick internet search, I found various comments and reports of Stephen's research into alcohol abuse and youth drinking. Stephen was also the co-editor of the book Drugs and Work, Responding to Alcohol and Other Drug Problems in Australian Workplaces. This book came out in 2001 and it's available through ipcommunications.com.au. It's around $45 Australian. We'll be including a review of the book in our Safety at Work magazine next month. But as you'll hear in the interview, Stephen is also very active in the community alcohol issues of Australia's Indigenous community, and he has a lot of very, very useful and interesting things to say. So here is Steve Allsopp.
Thanks for coming to have a chat with us. I wonder, Steve, if you could tell us. You're talking at a conference about amphetamine use.
Yeah.
I wondered if you can give me an idea of how prevalent amphetamine use is in the community and then compare that to its potential use in workplaces.
Yeah, I think it's first important to stress that the majority of people in the community don't use amphetamines. Now, it may seem like I'm sort of glossing over the issue, but I think it's very important. Why that's very important is because one of the factors that contributes to illegal drug use, or any form of drug use for that matter, is that normalization of drug use. If we think that everybody else is doing it, it's a sort of added context or pressure for people to consume. So I think it's first very important to say that most people don't use drugs. The latest national household survey has said that the majority of people in the workforce don't use drugs either, but of those in the workforce, about 17.3% in the last survey said that they used illegal drugs in the previous 12 months. And that's actually greater than people not in the paid workforce, about 12% of people who are not in paid work report that they've used drugs. So firstly, people who are employed are more likely to use drugs than people who are unemployed. And then in relation to amphetamines in particular, again, we've got to recognise this is a hidden behaviour. People are often reluctant to give us information about their drug use. But what we do know is that approximately 10% of the population say that they've used amphetamines at some point in their lives. It doesn't necessarily mean they're regular users. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're using now. But it does indicate that they've used at some point. I think if you're talking about recent use, you're talking about real single digits. A very small proportion of people will be using at any one time.
All right. And when we talk about amphetamines, these are drugs that are commonly called speed. Is the one that I've heard most about. It's been around for quite a while. Is that the case?
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the things that's important to recognise is the plurality of the term amphetamines. And the reason that's used is because there are a wide variety of amphetamines. There are amphetamines such as dexamphetamine, which is a drug that's prescribed for a variety of ill health problems. That is also diverted to for illegal use, and we. But there's also drugs such as methamphetamine, which, when it's produced in its crystal form, is referred to as ice. There are a variety of other products. There's amphetamine paste and so on. But a common generic term that's used in the community and by consumers is speed.
That there is such a variety of amphetamines, does that make it difficult then for somebody who's managing a workplace to be able to identify somebody who may be affected by these products?
I think that's a really important point. In a lot of the work that I do, I actually point out that it would be preferable for supervisors not to try and identify whether somebody's drug affected, but to try and identify whether somebody's impaired or incapable of carrying out their work. If I could give an example of that, I was once a supervisor of someone who I suspected of having an alcohol problem. I'm someone who's a professor of addictions, worked in the drug field for 25 years, but first and foremost, in this case, I was his supervisor. Now, I didn't diagnose an alcohol problem. I didn't say to him, I think you've got a drinking problem, because that would have been difficult ground for me as a supervisor, notwithstanding my expertise. What I did do was I tackled him on the basis of the fact that he was disappearing for very long lunch breaks, coming back, appearing to be impaired, not coming back on Friday afternoons, coming in very late on Monday morning. His relationship with some of the staff, particularly in the afternoons, was lower than what we would expect, his performance in a number of his work areas were not up to the mark. What I did was I tackled him about work performance issues rather than try and diagnose whether he's got a drug problem, because we've got to recognise that a lot of the symptoms of drug use could also be the symptoms of many other things. They could be the symptoms of fatigue, they could be the symptoms of depression or anxiety. And so I think what supervisors should particularly be mindful of is, and what employers should do is help their supervisors develop good work performance management skills. There's nothing unique about drugs. Leave the diagnosis to people who have been trained in that area, so occupational health staff, external health staff. It's appropriate to say to someone, your work is not, I'm concerned about your work, I'm concerned that you may well be impaired, and what I'd like to suggest is that we need to remedy this, and you may need to seek help. I'm going to refer you to the workplace doctor or the nurse or the occ health and safety staff, whoever the relevant officer is in the agency.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that that health and safety regulators and safety managers are trying to deal with is this amorphous hazard that we've got now of psychosocial hazards. There are as many of those as there are versions of amphetamines, I imagine. Have you had OHS regulators acknowledge the presence of impairments or drug impairments as a major hazard? And is there any programs or any activities going on by the regulators in this area?
Very much so. I can cite a couple of examples, but this doesn't mean it's not happening in other jurisdictions. Firstly, a lot of the health and safety regulations in the various jurisdictions are implicitly relevant to drug issues. So in terms of the general regulations and guidelines about occupational health and safety, some industries and some jurisdictions specifically identify alcohol and drugs about employees not coming to work impaired by alcohol or other drugs. And a number of jurisdictions have developed guidelines. So, for example, in Western Australia, there's a guidance note for employers about helping employers and employees understand drug problems and providing some policy frameworks to develop effective responses to drug problems. And I know that's occurred in a number of other jurisdictions as well. I can speak most eloquently about WA simply because I live here.
Sure. I wondered, though, whether one of the things that a lot of companies have done that I've seen is when they're faced with a drug impairment, alcohol issue, they run to an external agency for the employee assistance program or something like that, because it's a type of hazard that they're not familiar with. I wonder what your thoughts are. Is that the type of thing that should be managed in-house, or can externals really help?
Yeah, I think there's no simple answer to this. I think, in fact, it depends. I think that I've seen some excellent in-house programs where companies, I worked with one very large mining company who, over a period of 2 years, this was a long-term investment of effort where they had ensured that all staff were exposed to a rationale for reducing alcohol and drug problems in the workplace. They made sure that people were aware of what the risks were. They had particular training for their supervisors. They liaised with both the employee and the employer organization. They liaised with the contractors. They had me go in and observe the behavior on the various sites, both the mining sites and the administrative sites. And then they developed up a series of initiatives about the response. They had a wet mess, so the responsible service of alcohol, the provision of alternatives, ensuring that plenty of water was available, and also liaising with the police in terms of illegal drug use that might be occurring, or to try and prevent that occurring. And they did that very much in-house. Some companies, particularly smaller companies, don't have that sort of internal resource, and they rely on external providers, and as in all these things, there are some very excellent external providers. There are also some less good external providers, and I think one of the things would be to seek evidence from any external providers that they are providing something that's consistent with quality practice. There are a range of consultants around who can advise on that. But also, I've also seen, for example, in the building industry, the Building Trades Union actually put together their own program and collaborated with employer groups, and they've actually produced a program that's world-renowned, has won a number of awards both internationally and within Australia, and the union even run their own rehabilitation service. So I don't think it's a case of one size fits all. I think the different work context, the different work expertise, the different sizes of organisations requires that we have a variety of different approaches. What's critically important is that whether it's an internal program or an external program, you actually ensure that it's consistent with the best available evidence. And whilst that might seem at first hard to come by, there is expertise around the country that can advise on this.
I wondered, you've mentioned two industries there, and I know there's a lot of safety things that we can learn from mining and building. But really, amphetamine use in the workplace has probably had its highest profile through the transport industry. I wonder if your thoughts are, is it that it is unfair to pick out a specific industry, or whether there is, we do need to look at that industry and see what we can learn from that?
No, I think we need to recognise that one of the things is that drug problems, a variety of forms of drug use, are not evenly distributed amongst industries. For example, we've known for a long time that alcohol problems are much more prevalent in the hospitality industry for a variety of reasons. It's also more prevalent in other industries as well. It's not uniquely the hospitality industry, but we know that amphetamine use has been more prominent in some industries than others. One of those industries has been long-distance driving. But it's not uniquely long-distance driving. For example, the hospitality technology industry seems to have higher levels of amphetamine use than other industries. Well, why might that be? Well, I think it's because of a variety of factors, but you could subsume them under two broad headings. Problems that individuals might bring into work or behaviors that people might bring into work and the characteristics of the workplace. So, for example, some people might be attracted to work in particular industries or certain types of people might be recruited into particular industries. So we know, for example, that drug use is much more prevalent and heavy drug use is much more prevalent amongst younger people than older people. So if you predominantly recruit younger people, the risk of recruiting people who might be at risk of drug use is higher than if you recruit an older working population. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we know that alcohol consumption is much heavier in the northwest of the northwest of Australia than it is in the southeast of Australia. So if you recruit your staff predominantly from the northwest as opposed to the southeast, you may recruit heavier drinkers. What happens in people's lives has an impact in the workplace. But then we know that workplaces themselves carry risk. So people who work in jobs where they're working irregular hours, long hours, working night shifts and so on, are more at risk of using drugs to help them get to sleep or of using drugs to help them stay awake. We know that jobs that have low levels of supervision have much higher levels of drug use than jobs that have high levels of supervision and high levels of accountability. So people who work on their own, people who travel, who have large unaccounted expense accounts, are more at risk of alcohol problems than somebody who is in a more contained environment. So there are things to do with the workplace as well. So going back to your original question, I don't think it's unfair to pick or to identify the transport industry as an industry that's had some particular risks. It would be unfair if we said it was a unique in that regard. There are other industries that also are at risk.
One last question before you go to the airport. You work with the National Drug Research Institute.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you can give us a bit of an idea of what of the future plans or the future activities of the National Drug Research Institute.
In specifically in relation to the workplace?
Oh, well, that would be nice.
Yeah.
I know you're very active, publicly and on issues of drinking and youth, alcohol abuse and a whole range of things.
Okay, well, I'll talk generally and then perhaps narrow it down to the workplace. Our task is really to focus on developing effective and evaluating the implementation of prevention strategies and harm minimization strategies. And I think, we now do have a reasonable body of evidence about the things that do work. We've still a long way to go as well. But, for example, we know that if young people are well connected to school, well connected to community, well connected to adults, they're much less likely to get enmeshed in drug use. And so I think one of the things we need to do is, and what we've found is those factors predict other things as well. I mean, if you're not connected to school and not connected to families and so on, you're more vulnerable to a range of mental health problems, conduct disorders, risk of criminal involvement. So one of the things we need to do as a society is, and one of the things we're keen to encourage, is investment in those sorts of programs. And governments have begun to do this to some extent. If young people are becoming disconnected to school, I'm not just talking about not turning up, but just not engaged, then we need to see that as an early warning that there's some risk here. Not that they'll automatically engage in drug use, but that there's a risk. And there are programs that can help engage young people back in the school system. If we have vulnerable families, then we should see that as an opportunity to invest some modest resources to support those families. Because if we don't, then we pay a much higher cost down the line, whether we're employers or whether we're members of the community. And we're very keen also to particularly help build the capacity in indigenous communities. Lots of people in indigenous communities don't use drugs, don't use alcohol, but when they do, it can create a disproportionate amount of harm in those communities. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing is working in partnership with indigenous communities to look at building effective interventions, both prevention and treatment, in those communities, and importantly, building the capacity of indigenous people so that they can actually respond to these issues themselves. We're also going to be ensuring that we need to get much better intelligence or information about drug use, and we're trying to build up those profiles. And the reason for that is drug use can change quite rapidly. And again, this is an issue that is relevant both for the broad community and for workplaces. And an example of that would be, we're now seeing the internet, for example, becoming a source of pharmaceuticals, both legitimately and illegitimately. Anybody who receives spam will see that, it's sort of hair restoratives, Viagra, and various pharmaceuticals. And that's going to have relevance for the health of our community. And the internet's also a source of a great deal of misinformation about drugs and accurate information about drugs. So we need to sort of rise to the challenge of new forms of drug use, and we need to rise to the challenge of new technology. And then in particular, I think in the workplace, we really do have a paucity of information. We really don't have good information. It's understandable why we don't. It's a hidden behavior in the broad community, and of course there's very many reasons why people aren't going to volunteer information about their drug use at work. And so we need to have quality information about the ways in which drugs affect the workplace. And I think build up a better understanding of what are effective interventions. And in particular, I think invest in developing cultures in the workplace that are antagonistic to hazardous drug use. And what I mean by that is, if we simply rely on law enforcement, or if we simply rely on rules and regulations, then we're setting the scene for failure. It's not to say those things aren't important. They are. But we have to actually have a culture that supports non-use or delayed use or restricted use of these drugs, depending on which sort of drugs we're talking about. We have to have, and a good example of that, I think, is drink driving. Drink driving used to be seen as trivial, almost as a dueling scar if you got done for drink driving. We've changed as a community. It's not just about having the police presence and enforcement, which is critically important. It's about having the community recognise that RBT is good for all of us. And I think, and the community support RBT in a way that, for example, I don't think they support speed cameras, despite the fact that speed cameras also contribute enormously to safety. And I think we have to sort of institutionalize these sorts of responses. And I'll give one final example in the workplace. It used to be that safety hats were seen as something that wusses wore, and now it's a declaration of masculinity. And I think it would be good if we were able to shift effective responses to drug problems in the workplace from a sort of seen as a management infringement of private entertainment to be seen as something that all of the workforce saw as an important part of ensuring that they lived and worked in a safe and productive environment.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that one of the things that the safety industry as a whole has been looking at is that trying to avoid the issues of this is a workplace that is not a workplace, and so trying to break down the barriers of definition.
Yeah.
So that we actually do look at non-work impacts on workplaces. So, look, it's been fascinating talking with you. I hope I haven't delayed you from your plane.
No, you haven't.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Professor Stephen Allsop. Please remember that more information on this topic will be available through Safety at Work magazine. onto some podcast matters, I want to thank those listeners who have taken the time to provide feedback. I've been told that many of the OHS regulators and corporations firewall podcasts, so we're not maybe reaching all of the listeners at work. I realize that productivity drops when you stream concert podcasts to the desktop, but as more and more podcasts have exclusive and topical information rather than entertainment, I hope that the firewall rules will be reviewed. If you're having this problem, please contact your IT person and get them to be more flexible. If it doesn't, drop me an email at joneskay@safetyatwork.biz and I'll correspond directly with your director and see what we can do. Our next podcast will be another exclusive interview, this time with Jukka Takala, the newly appointed director of the European Agency for Safety and Health at Work. I interviewed Jukka in 2003 in his role with the ILO Safe Work Programme, and although his brief may be less global now, he's a fascinating leader in OHS in the big picture. I hope that you can join us in the next couple of weeks. Don't forget you can subscribe to the Safety at Work podcasts through our website, safetyatwork.biz, that's B-I-Z, or through itunes.com if you have that free software. Remember, all Safety at Work podcasts are free to listen to, and I hope that you will recommend them to your colleagues, your friends, and maybe even students. My name's Kevin Jones, and I hope you'll stay safe till next time. You've been listening to Safety at Work podcast.